Okay, thanks a lot, Joe, and I appreciate the organizing committee for inviting me here. It's good to be back to speak at Range Beef Cow Symposium. I think this is the third or fourth time I've spoken, and really enjoy speaking to everybody here, and hopefully some of the stuff that I talk about today, you'll take one or two of the things that I might talk about, and hopefully they'll be applicable to your operations when you get back home. And I'm not going to talk a lot about synchronization of estrus and different synchronization protocols. Basically, all right. I guess I've got to turn it on, huh? Yeah. All right. So basically, though, we know how to synchronize cows. And in terms of development of estrus synchronization protocols, we haven't made a lot of changes to synchronization protocols that we would recommend to people out there. And so if you're thinking about different estrus synchronization protocols, the thing that I will do is to let you know that there are recommended synchronization protocols that the Beef Reproduction Task Force, which I'm a member of, and it encompasses many folks that are at the universities that do research on reproductive physiology, but we also include the artificial insemination companies, the veterinary community, and the pharmaceutical industry on those systems that work best. And so those are these protocol sheets, and you can find these protocol sheets in the back of the AI SIRE directories. And when you're trying to decide a synchronization system, try and focus on these systems as those at work. We know that they work. We know that year after year they've worked. And utilize these systems for your synchronization protocol. Very often when we do a lot of troubleshooting for estrus synchronization in beef cattle producers' operations is we find that they've tried something that wasn't on these protocol sheets. And then, and it's usually because they've been told by a neighbor or by somebody who does embryo transfer, you need to try this system because your cows will show better heat. But ultimately, the synchronization systems that we have on the protocol sheets are the systems that I would recommend that you guys stick with. So I put these protocol sheets up there and know that there are heifer protocols and cow protocols because there are subtle differences between heifers and cows in how they respond. So like I said, I'm not going to talk about individual protocols here. I just wanted to direct you to where you can find estrus synchronization protocols. But I'm going to focus more on what it takes over time. And the thing that I think is most difficult, when I talk about pregnancy rates, I'm going to be talking about whole herd pregnancy rates where we don't eliminate cows that we don't artificially inseminate. We take the whole herd and include those in the pregnancy rate diagnosis. Very often when people say, oh, I had really good pregnancy rates or I had great conception rates to AI, they might say I got 80 or 90% pregnancy rates or conception rates. They only take into account the cows that they artificially inseminated. But if you're truly evaluating your operation, include every cow that calved that is going to go through that next breeding season because those it's your whole herd that counts. And you're going to find a lot of variation. This slide represents 14 different operations. We're all treated with exactly the same protocol. And every one of you is going to see these results. You're also going to see, if this was the same herd for 14 years, this is exactly what it would look like also. So don't expect exactly the same pregnancy rates year in and year out. But pregnancy rates will range somewhere between the low 40% range to the mid 60% range. And if you're somewhere in that range, you're probably somewhere about average. And that, again, is if you include your whole herd. But I was asked to talk today about the long-term effects of reproductive technologies, estrus synchronization, and so on in an operation. And so I've been down at the University of Florida, North Florida Research and Education Center for 8 years. And the great opportunity about me being down there is when I got there, we had a 300-head cow-calf operation that I essentially had a clean slate. Well, we managed to go into that operation and apply some of the things that we've been talking about for years and then follow that herd for a period of time and see what happens if you implement some reproductive technologies. What happens to an operation like that? And so Like I said, it's a 300-head cow-calf operation. About half of the cows are Angus, semi-Angus-based cows. About a third of the cows are Brangus-based, and then the remainder are Brayford-based cows. So we have some Bos Indicus-based cattle in there, but half of the cows are semi-Angus and Angus cows. And so the thing that I wanted to do, like I said, we had a clean slate, and the thing that was most important to me was pregnancy. And very often when you're talking about your AI bulls or you're talking about your operation, how many of you actually talk about pregnancy as the number one trait you select for in your operation? And pregnancy has about a 4 times greater economic impact than any other production trait that we select for. Yet how many of us, when we're trying to select cattle, do we actually go, geez, I want to select for pregnancy first? And that's what we decided we were going to do. Is we were going to pay the most attention to pregnancy in that operation. And then we're going to utilize artificial insemination to bring in some of the other traits that were important to us. But because but pregnancy was going to be our number one trait that we were going to select for. So what did we do? We did basically 3 things to select for pregnancy in this operation. And the first thing that we did is we wanted to keep only heifers that become pregnant in the first 25 days of the breeding season. That's the very first thing we did. And so basically this comes back to some of this data that was published out of the USDA Mark, but there are lots of other data sets that mirror this very, very closely. If you look at this slide, the black line represents heifers that became pregnant in the first 21 days of the breeding season, and those animals were followed for the next 9 calving seasons. And then the other two are heifers that become pregnant in the 21 to 42 days into the breeding season. And then the dotted line down at the bottom would be any heifer that became pregnant 43 days and later into their first breeding season. And when you look at this slide, you realize that those animals that became pregnant in the first 21 days of the breeding season as heifers remained in the herd longer and so had more longevity in the operations than if they became pregnant outside of the first 21 days of the breeding season. So that was our first thing that we did. We were only going to keep heifers pregnant in the first 25 days of the breeding season. That was the rule that we put on females in our herd. The other thing that happened in this operation, in this data set, is when you take a look at the lifetime productivity of heifers that became pregnant in the first 21 days of the breeding season, they ended up weaning heavier calves at least through the first 6 calves. Just by becoming pregnant in the first 21 days as heifers, they ended up weaning heavier calves for the first 6 calves that they produced over the other animals. And so we want, not only were they lasting longer in the operation, but they were producing heavier calves for us, at least through those first 6 calves, and in many cases through the first 7 calves. So for us, what does that mean? That means we had to keep back more heifers. What a lot of people do is they'll select their best heifers and they're going to do their best to get those animals pregnant through the breeding season. We had to change the way we thought about that. We had to keep more animals because we weren't going to get all of our heifers pregnant in the first 25 days. So our goal is to keep back 60 replacement heifers, pregnant replacement heifers that become pregnant in the first 25 days. That means we select our best 90 heifers. We run them through an estrus synchronization protocol and time AI them. And then we either resynchronize them or expose them to a bull for the rest of the breeding season. And then we pregnancy detect them. And we usually get somewhere between 70 and 80 heifers pregnant in the first, basically the first 2 cycles. Anything that is not pregnant in those first 2 cycles is eliminated from the herd and is sold to somebody else. And then we get to cull about 10 to 15 pregnant heifers. So, yeah, it does mean that you have to keep a few extra heifers around, but basically giving yourself a chance to keep those 60 heifers that are pregnant in the first 25 days. So that's the first thing that we did, is we put pressure on the herd for pregnancy by keeping pregnant heifers that were pregnant early. The next thing we did is we came up with a set of rules for the cows, and we've stuck by these rules in that herd. First rule is that the female must calve by the time she's 24 months of age. That's quite simple because we keep heifers that are pregnant in the first 25 days of the breeding season. She has to calve once a year every year. If she skips a year, she's gone. She's got to calve without assistance. Any cow that we have to help in some way, we eliminate from the herd. Okay, and she's got to have sufficient resources for the genetic potential of the calf. And essentially, that's producing enough milk and producing a calf that is has a decent enough weaning weight. And she has to produce a calf that's genetically capable of performing. And then the second last thing is that she has to maintain a body condition score. What we don't want to do is we don't want to feed cows or supplement cows separately because we've got some cows that are getting thin compared to other cows. Every cow has to be able to stay in the herd, and so we don't want to supplement different groups of cows. We want everything to be able to be managed together. And the last thing is we call any cow that's crazy. I mean, basically, any cow that has a disposition problem is eliminated. A big reason for that is we're a research operation, has a lot of people there. We don't want people getting hurt. But in addition to that, there are a lot of other reasons. But if you have one crazy cow, it seems to make the rest of the herd crazy. So if we can eliminate those crazy cows, it'll increase the calmness of the whole herd. So this is what we did. I had to convince a staff at this operation when I got there that we were going to artificially inseminate cows. And I think many of you probably go through the same things when you're thinking about artificial insemination. It's very simple for us to go and turn in a bull, and then 65, 90, 120 days later, however long your breeding season is, you take the bull out. That's quite a simple thing to do. Well, that's what the staff at this experiment station was going through. And then I come along and I say, well, now we're going to expose every single cow to artificial insemination in that operation. And so they had to overcome some of the hassle factors. And I think that this is probably the case for many of you. Ultimately, these hassle factors come down to four things. We find lots of reasons why not to artificially inseminate. And I heard a lot of these reasons from my staff. But ultimately, those hassle factors, one is that it's too difficult to select sires and the synchronization protocols are too complicated. We've certainly simplified that a lot. Okay, having reliable facilities. Well, in today's world, there are a lot of portable facilities, a lot of turnkey programs. The AI companies will come into your operation and bring in all the facilities. That's not so much an excuse anymore. And then having good enough labor to actually administer the products, to artificially inseminate the cows and so on. And then the last thing is time. Those are essentially the four main reasons why people don't use synchronization and artificial insemination. It comes down to those four things. They come up with a lot of other excuses, but it ultimately comes down to those four things. And that's what I had to overcome at this operation, is I had to convince the staff that this was actually going to be beneficial down the road. So in 2006 and 2007, those cows were exposed to about 120-day breeding season. It was probably longer. When I go back to the records, I'm not sure that they pulled the bulls at 120 days. But then I got there, and down at the bottom is 2008. I got there in the winter of 2008, and I said, now we're going to start artificially inseminating. We're putting pressure on this herd for pregnancy, and this is what we're going to do. So I thought 120-day breeding season was a little bit too long. Some of you might think that it might be a third too short. But I thought we could reduce the breeding season length. And so what we did is, you'll see we artificially inseminated the heifers on the very first day of the breeding season down there at the bottom left. And then a week later, we artificially inseminated all cows that were eligible to be synchronized. But because of the long breeding season the year before, we still had cows that were calving when we started the breeding season. So we had a second group of AI cows that we call the late cows. We inseminated those. We synchronized them and AI'd them. And then we still had a really late group of cows that calved really late, and we synchronized them. So we had three synchronization periods in that first breeding season, and then we removed the bulls about 10 days early compared to the year before. So you can see how popular I was at that operation, running cattle through the chute that many times. But I was committed to it. I said, we're going to see if synchronization and AI actually pays off. So then the next year was 2009, up at the top, same scenario. We had three breeding seasons, three breeding periods for the cows, but we removed the bulls earlier. And then 2010, Now you'll start to see we eliminated one of those breedings because we've reduced the breeding season, but we've gradually caused cows to calve earlier in the calving season, and we removed bulls a little bit earlier. And then down at the bottom, 2011 sort of mirrors 2010, except for we reduced the breeding season a little bit shorter. And then 2012 and 2013. Now, every cow is eligible to be bred on the first day of the breeding season. And any cow that does not get bred on the first day of the breeding season by artificial insemination, by fixed-timed AI, we only use fixed-timed AI. I'm not sure why people heat check anymore. But fixed-timed artificial insemination on the first day of the breeding season, any cow that is not eligible, so any cow that has not calved within 21 days or later of when we want to start AI in those cows, she's eliminated from the herd. So now we have about a 70-day breeding season, and if you look very carefully, our breeding season for our cows is about 60 to 62 days. It's not 70 days. So that's what we've managed to do over 6 years. We've reduced the breeding season. We've made things a little bit less complicated on that operation over time. And every cow now is synchronized and exposed to artificial insemination. So this is what happens. This is cumulative calving within each year. And so if from the left-hand side of the graph to the right-hand side of the graph, you'll see down at the bottom it says 1 to 141. That's the days of the calving season, and each of those lines represents the calving for each of the years. And so if you start on the right-hand side, you'll see red and sort of olive greenish color. Those are the calving seasons before we implemented any pressure on that herd for pregnancy. And look how strung out those calving seasons are, taking about 140 days to calve. And so as you move to the left, and we didn't plan this, we just retrospectively went in and collected all of the data. So as you move left, you'll see the yellow bar, then a blue, and you just gradually move to the left. Every color to the left is every subsequent year. Just by sticking to synchronization and AI, we gradually moved the calving season to the left so that the average calving date continued to shift to the left, close to the beginning of the breeding season. That's quite significant. What a lot of people get really hung up on is the pregnancy rates to AI. And I'm here to tell you that, to me, that's not the most important thing. To me, the most important thing is what percentage of your cows can become pregnant in the first 30 days of the breeding season. If you ask me the pregnancy rates, where did we get the best pregnancy rates to AI here? I can tell you they range from 33% to 59%, and I can't tell you which graph it is. I'd have to look carefully. What I can tell you, though, is sticking to the goal of pregnancy, getting as many cattle pregnant in the first 30 days of the breeding season, that has helped us shift the calving season towards the left, allowing us to calve more calves in the first 30 days than just by being disappointed with pregnancy rates to AI. I don't get upset with pregnancy rates to AI anymore because I think most of the time people are so worried about pregnancy rates to AI rather than the benefits of the synchronization to stimulating cows to start to cycle for that breeding season. So if they're not cycling, at least you'll get them kick-started and the bull will pick them up sooner than had you not synchronized those cows. So this next slide then represents the overall breeding season pregnancy rates. That top row there, it says PR. The two columns on the left represent the pregnancy rates before we implemented any pressure for pregnancy. And you'll see the pregnancy rates in the low 80% range. 6 years later, look where the pregnancy rates are. About 92 to 94%. We've increased overall breeding season pregnancy rates by 10%. While at the same time reducing breeding season length by 50 days. And the one thing that I wasn't quite aware of until about a year ago, I realized we had a different income stream now in that operation because now we're selling pregnant cows just to maintain our 300-head operation. Before, we were keeping every cow that was pregnant just because that's how we maintained the herd size. Now we can sell pregnant cows to somebody else. Okay. But to me, this is the most important slide here, and if you take a look there down at the third row down, you'll see in 2008, our breeding season from 2008, that the average calf was worth, in today's dollars, so everything is on constant dollar value because I didn't want the market fluctuation to show differences from year to year. I wanted calf to demonstrate calf performance. But in 2008, each calf, after just exposing those cows to synchronization and AI the first year, we increased pregnancy rates by increased calf value by $87 per calf. Right now, our calves are worth $169 more per calf than where we were 6 years ago, just by simply putting pressure on that operation for pregnancy. And to that operation, down at the bottom, we're bringing in about $50,000 more to that operation in calf value by just putting pressure on that operation and sticking to our guns through synchronization and AI than where we were 6 years ago in constant calf value. Now, the one thing I do is I allow our staff to spend that $50,000. And can you imagine in your operations what you could do with $50,000? I don't hear as much bitching and complaining by our staff right now like they did before about running cattle through the chute. Okay? And so that's just in calf value. That's what we've been able to do to that operation. And that's just by sticking to our guns and taking time to put pressure on that herd for pregnancy. I want to share another set of data, and this is some data I collected in South Dakota 2 years ago, and it was on about 1,700 cows, seven different operations, and eight herds on those seven different operations. And every herd was treated with exactly the same fixed-timed AI system, the seven-day co-sync plus estrus synchronization system. And these were the pregnancy rates we got. They were all treated exactly the same way. And so these are pregnancy rates that we got, ranging from around 44% up to around 67% pregnancy rates. And what often happens is somebody gets about 44% pregnancy rates and they go, geez, that pregnancy rates, they were terrible. I'm not going to AI again. And so they give up with their AI because it didn't work. But what I wanted to do is I looked at this operation, at this data, and it was an FDA study. And so we collected a lot of data. We collected blood work. We collected body condition scores, calving data, anything you could think of. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to look at what was it about those three operations that got very good pregnancy rates versus those five operations that we would say were not as good as what we would have hoped. And after looking at all of that data, the only thing that was consistent among those three operations that did well was that those herds had artificially inseminated and synchronized those cows consistently for 8 years or more in a row. Those other five operations had never AI'd their cows more than 1 year in a row, or they just used natural service. And so I think very often we have unrealistic expectations when we implement a synchronization and AI program. We get low pregnancy rates and say it didn't work and we're done, rather than sticking with it for a period of time. And that's exactly what happened in these operations. When you take a look at that first operation that got 57% pregnancy rates, this is the distribution in days postpartum from when the cows calved until they were AI'd. Look how tight the synchrony is in those, how uniform those cows are. This represents 400 cows, and they're all within about a 30-day interval of when they calve. Very uniform set of cows. This is what happens with estrus synchronization and AI over time. Now, can this herd? This is herd number five. Herd number five has a lot more variation in days postpartum when we went to artificially inseminate those cows. Can these guys expect the same pregnancy rates that the other herd was getting after that other herd had synchronized for 12 years nonstop in a row? They'd committed to it for a period of time. And so I think that that's a take-home message is if you do get poor pregnancy rates, don't necessarily blame the synchronization system. Stick with it for a period of time before you realize that it doesn't work. But invariably, it's going to be a lot more successful over time. So let me just quickly touch on some other economics of implementing a timed AI program. And this is some data that we collected about 7 years ago and published about 6 years ago. And what we did is we went into eight different herds, and half the herd we exposed to estrus synchronization and AI, and the other half of the herd was not exposed to, they were just naturally mated. And these eight herds had never used AI before. And so so half of the cows in each of those herds was exposed to synchronization and AI. The other half were just managed the same way those herds had been managed previously. And right here you'll see about 600 cows per group. The very first thing that we realized is just by exposing cows to synchronization and AI, we increased the percentage of cows that weaned a calf 18 months later increased by 6%. So in other words, if you expose cows to synchronization and AI now, when they go through the rest of the breeding season, they go and they calve, and then they wean those calves 18 months from now, you'll get about 6% more calves than if you did not expose those cows to synchronization and AI. And these are fairly well-managed herds. These were natural service herds that had less than 75-day breeding seasons. The significant thing here is that those cows that were exposed to estrus synchronization and AI weaned about 38 more pounds of calf just by being exposed to synchronization than by not being exposed to synchronization when they weaned those calves 18 months later. And then when you take a look at the economics, we were fortunate enough to look at partial budget analysis. We went into their operations and used all of their own data. And we had one operation that had about a $6 loss by exposing their cows to synchronization and AI. But the other seven operations had anywhere from a $19 to $139 increase in value, basically profit, by exposing those cows to synchronization and AI versus if they just use natural service, for an average of about $49 per cow that was exposed. Now, the numbers are very different right now because we've been through a change in the market. And so what I did is I thought, well, I'll use that economic model. And essentially what this is, this slide says, is you'll see there's a $3,000, $6,000, or $10,000 value at the top. And what that says is you're faced now with a decision this winter. You've got to go and purchase. You've either got to make a decision to use artificial insemination in your herd, or to purchase bulls. Either purchase a $3,000, $6,000, or $10,000 bull, or multiple bulls. Okay. And so I use this model, and it's basically a decision aid tool. So if you say, let's say I'm going to go and purchase $6,000 bulls rather than using artificial insemination and synchronization, you're going to give up about $114 per cow by buying those $6,000 bulls rather than using synchronization and AI. But let's say you decide to use artificial insemination rather than purchasing a ton of those $6,000 bulls. You'll generate back to your operation around $9,000 compared to bring back $9,000 total if you have 100 cows in your operation. Okay, the reason what a lot of people don't get when we start talking about this stuff is they get really hung up on the price of the seeder, they get really hung up on the price of the semen, or the price of the AI technician. What they don't realize is the cost of pregnancy is probably more affected by your bull to cow ratio and the cost of the bull than it is by any of those things. And I see a lot of people haggling over semen for an extra dollar or to reduce the semen by a dollar or to reduce the seeder cost by 50 cents. But when you put that into an economic model, it doesn't change the numbers all that much. I mean, but the bull-to-cow ratio and the cost of bulls makes a significant affects these numbers significantly. So pay close attention to that. The one thing that hasn't changed a lot are the price of the pharmaceutical products and the price of the semen over the last 5 or 6 years. But the price of bulls has changed significantly. And so that's why take a very good look at this economic model, because you might find that artificial insemination in your operation might be more beneficial financially to you. So I can show you these sort of values all you want, but you may not believe it in your own operation. So we basically developed this thing. It's called the AI calculator. It's a smartphone application. If you have an iPhone or an Android device, just go out and download it. You can download it for free. And you can enter your own information on this calculator and calculate. And essentially the calculator is designed for you to sit there and say, should I go and buy bulls for what I think I should be paying for bulls, or should I use artificial insemination in my operation based on my cow numbers, based on what my AI tech says that he's going to sell me semen for and what I can get the products for in my own operation? Use the AI calculator for that, and it might be beneficial in your operations. Essentially, that's what it looks like. And basically, you click on the little calculator button at the bottom. You enter a few things. It's not like these big models. You just enter a couple of things, like what you expect to pay for bulls, interest on the bull, maintenance costs of your bulls, your herd size, the number of cows in your operation. Remember, if you're using artificial insemination, you're also going to be using cleanup bulls. So you have to include cleanup bulls, and that's included in this model. And then it also gives you the opportunity to include things as such as synchronization costs, extra labor for AI because it takes extra labor, facilities costs, things like that. Put those things into that AI calculator, and when you get to the end, if that number comes up as green, it means, yeah, go ahead and use artificial insemination and synchronization. If it comes up as red, go and purchase the bulls because AI is probably not going to pay in your operation. So we do have an Excel model. My contact information is on the next slide. If you want a version of the Excel model, I'll be happy to send it to you. But it does exactly the same thing. So if you don't have a smartphone application or if you don't have a smartphone, the Excel model will work. And so with that, I will end there and hand it back over to Joe. Thank you very much.